how they treat fire training, maintenance, those kinds of questions?
They will be treated the same between Phase 1 and Phase 2 in our region if the low-threat discharge basin plan amendment is adopted, to be consistent with that amendment. So they're actually how both Phase 1 and Phase 2 will treat them is that we ask for sensible BMP program to be developed and submitted to us, and then we can approve it. And when that occurs for both Phase 1 and Phase 2, that should satisfy the requirements of the basin plan amendment if it's adopted.
Under current condition, what's the distinction, or is there any, between a Phase 1, Phase 2?
There's no distinction currently either.
Right.
I think a lot of it comes down to the basin plan right now that you'll be considering tomorrow. Currently, all dry weather discharges are prohibited. So whether it's in a Phase 1 or a Phase 2 or outside of an MS4 boundary.
All right. Chair would like to keep it to the item today. Tomorrow's another day, and it's hard sometimes they blend together, but as much as we can keep it to MS4. And yes,
When you asked the question, I did look at the Phase 2 MS4 and the difference. The Phase 2 permit also only exempts emergency activities. So the training and the repair discharges associated with those activities would also have to have BMPs. So they're the same, exactly what Mona was saying.
So they're, if we adopt this in October, they'd be the same after its adoption as they are today for both Phase 1 and Phase 2? That's how I hear what you're saying.
Yes. If you're asking what the current permit says.
Right.
Yeah, I'm not. Okay, the current permit.
Yeah, the current permit is less clear on this issue. And I wasn't in this program when it was adopted, so I'll try. Maybe John will jump in if I misstate something. My understanding is that the permit doesn't really address the issue of non-stormwater flows in its fullest extent in order to comply with the basin plan. So right now we are working on all the municipal stormwater programs on bringing them up to date with the regulations Kim was just discussing. So currently our MS4 permits, whether they're Phase 1 or Phase 2, haven't adequately addressed this issue. And I'm doing outreach as well with our Phase 2s to help them develop a BMP program to comply with this as well.
Mr. Corbett.
Yeah, I wanted staff's position on the Phase 1 and 2 map issue as presented.
Well, this is a new issue to us in the second round of comments, so we haven't fully gotten to investigate yet.
Okay.
I have a kind of some preliminary. Let me get back. I've tried to take lots of notes here on what everyone said. So let me give you a little preliminary discussion, and Kim or John can jump in as needed. The reason that they were initially designated as a Phase 1 with Santa Rosa is because the regs call out that Phase 1 and interconnected MS4s. So that was how they first became part of the Phase 1 program. And my understanding, too, is that when we were talking in the last permit cycle, which I did not write, but when we were talking about the Grayton and Healdsburg areas, they were designated by the State Board as a Phase 2. And Sonoma County requested they be enrolled in the Phase 1 with the rest of the permit boundary to avoid having to pay two permit fees and to avoid having to do two annual reports. So our understanding is also is that this was at their request. Another issue is that the main difference between the Phase 1 and Phase 2, maybe Carol, this will help address your question too, it's designated by size of the municipality. So, and Phase 1s are for large and medium and large municipalities. But the main difference as far as they both Phase 1 and Phase 2 have the same minimum measures. So they're required to address the same programs. The Phase 2 program has been given additional time to come up to speed. on developing their program. But with a program that is already developed, there's really no ability for us to ratchet down their program if they were to go under a phase two, because that wouldn't meet MEP. You know, phase two programs are required to come up to speed, just like phase ones. And so our understanding is that the tasks would not be that different. We've tried to recognize in the phase one permit, and perhaps we haven't done a good enough job, and we're willing to try to do some more work on this, but we've tried to recognize different tasks within rural and urban areas. And so we think that because of this recognition and what we intend, and maybe there's some misunderstandings and miscommunications with our intent, that actually the task will not change. But if they were to change, we'd have to investigate whether this might be an anti-degradation issue to shrink an existing permit boundary. So those are some issues that we are talking about and we need additional time to consider.
All right. We're at somewhat of a fork in the road here in terms of what we end up doing. Chair's understanding that it's going to come back, anticipated in October, and we'll have a public hearing at that time and go over it, and it's a hit the redo button in terms of this discussion. I guess today the goal is to get direction, guidance from the board members. I don't know if you want individual comments, you want the board action. There's a
My understanding is that we can't take action today, but we're happy to receive any guidance you want to give us.
And, you know, I think be my observation that the staff began the presentation saying that there's evidence of some misunderstandings, there's some concerns being expressed by permit holders that might not be in, and we heard permit these make the same comment that as the discussions go, oh, that's what you meant, they come to a different place. So anticipate that. I hate to say that you need to equal 17 meetings again, but
I anticipate. Well, hopefully we've done a lot of the work already.
Anticipate there's going to be some ongoing of those kinds of discussions. So how do you want to help shape those discussions? Is the order at the moment, Mr. Hales?
Yes, I'm following suit with the same question and reading the summary report on page 11, the bottom paragraph. It alludes to staff seeking direction on a couple of items, specifically with respect to the permit boundary. The three options that were presented in that report, it seems that we have sort of a variation, or we're talking about a fourth now. So I don't know if we don't take action or provide, well, that we're not taking action, but if we don't provide some sort of guidance right now, does that leave you in limbo that you can't move forward? It seems along parallel lines, though, there are continuing discussions with the co-permittees that need to happen. Clearly, from our briefing, from what I've understood, your interpretation or in the comments that you've received, there are clearly some misunderstandings that still need to get ironed out. And as Mr. Bookert said earlier, the meetings have been very helpful when everybody's getting together and sort of fleshing those out. This is what it says. Oh, this is what you mean. So I think that there's that can happen in parallel. But, you know, with respect to the questions that were posed toward us, where does that leave you?
Well, So original thoughts on the permit boundary are included here. Staff's recommendation remains that we keep the existing permit boundary, but we do want to investigate the county's new comments on this issue, and we can definitely provide more information to you on that. But I think today based on what we know at this point, our recommendation would remain that the permit boundary that we have in place is appropriate. It's been there for 5 years, that there are some concerns about trying to dial things back there that we would need to consider.
And so that's something that you would you can still be working on as a similar task. So it's not we can provide you the whatever our thoughts and considerations are, but you still have some investigation on those options that one might actually make more sense, and that's what you'll come back to us with. So
and
that's
I think
part
that's,
of your findings.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that's actually true for a lot of the permit aspects. You mm-hmm. know, it's been helpful for us to hear all the testimony that we've heard today. And I think it's kind of it's clarified some issues that maybe it's helped us identify some issues that we need to clarify beyond what we had thought of before. So I think, you know, what we're generally maybe seeking from you today is specific areas that you would like us to investigate further, because I think that there are a lot of issues that have come up with the new comments that we haven't had enough time to prepare a definitive answer for you. So we would like to get some guidance from you and then be able to go back, meet with people, discuss issues, and provide more information to you when we come for adoption.
Well, I guess I would say that my guidance then would be, speaking for myself, is that, you know, as we've just sort of talked this through, that, you know, there are a couple of different pathways that it may be worth evaluating a little further to see if one makes more sense than the other. Either the default is sticking with the existing or your recommendation is sticking with the existing, but there may be other reasons or considerations to go with one of these options, and that's, you know, part of what it sounds like you're proposing to do anyhow.
Well,
so.
We also did receive comments supporting more stringent options than we're recommending. So we need to look at those issues as well.
Right. Well, I guess my question was is that if that you weren't specifically looking for a direction from us on that without that you would be held up.
I'd hate
to see that happen.
We'll do the best we can.
Yeah. I don't think we'll be held up, but of course whatever guidance you want to give us is great.
Carol?
Well, first of all, I want to thank you for all your hard work and for this wonderful packet that came. I attended a meeting at another state board, not connected with water, but with Department of Housing, wherein the panel members were not able to review written comments from the public. And when I got my packet and saw 153 letters to read, I was quite impressed that legal staff did not say that to include the packets would infer that staff agreed with all the letter writers. So thank you for letting us read those letters and determine on our own what we felt about them. You are to be commended. I would tend to go with keeping the boundary as is. I think that we do need to look at this as a watershed approach. I agreed with, I'm not sure if it was Mr. Levine or Mr. McInhill, but we are in this together, the county and the city, and we all contribute and we all need to participate. The way I see this, and maybe I'm wrong, is that we're under a permit, but each entity for each area is going to adopt their own BMPs. So there's flexibility, from what I see written in here, to address the best BMPs to address each particular area and issue. So I would urge you to keep the boundary keep the boundary as is, keep it all under the MS4, and continue to work with the co-permittees over the issues on cost and some of the other implementation concerns.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Norton.
Mona, I actually wanted to give some specific guidance too. I think that to clarify the requirements of the permit would be very helpful, because we hear a lot of different things and interpretations of a draft permit that comes into equation of costs, which I don't think are necessarily right or wrong, but I think they may be misunderstood. Whether City of Santa Rosa has to map their whole system or not, I see people shaking their head and saying no. While that's being said, it sounds like it was a high-dollar item, several million dollars, and if that's not to be done, then I think that would be great to clarify it. Similarly, I think it'd be very helpful to nailed down for the county for a Nathan Goro who says, you know, a pipe that runs under St. Helena Road or a culvert is a MS4 to us now, and we're subject to inspection and regulation of that. And is that in fact true? Is that taking the interpretation of an MS4 too far? I think that would be very good. I'd also like to see what are the implications of removing the waste load allocations. EPA recommends that be the case, but what is the implications to this permit by doing so?
At this time, we received an email guidance from Doug Eberhardt at EPA on Friday, which was more reflective of the approach that I had discussed, that they should not be enforceable waste load allocations, but the permit should include the TMDL. So we would like to have a further discussion with EPA and the co-permittees on this issue and bring more information to you.
Okay.
We feel that we need to investigate a little further.
Fair enough. On the side of costs, I'd really like to see some accurate costs from the permittees and really kind of nail that out. Because it's very hard to determine when we have published costs that are basically state or federal or state or nationwide, and we're wildly greater than that. That just doesn't seem to make sense to me. And for this is largely an issue about costs in hard economic times, and it is very real to look at it in those terms, and so we need to look at something that is believable. I have a hard time believing the wide range of costs that we saw today or heard today for myself. So I'd like to see something that looks at that. From that side, too, a cost versus benefit analysis. If a permittee says that a program is meaningless to do so, then is that in fact true? I think that the permittees can actually benefit from working towards some efficiencies. Kevin Booker, who I know through sampling, seems to water agency has very little land use controls and authority, but they seem to have a niche to go into the schools maybe and teach the kids about the importance of this. And like it or not, a stormwater program is about behavior modification. You have to be in some ways a social scientist to do this because we are changing behavior. That's what a lot of permits are about, or at least controlling behavior. I'd like to see more data presented in this program as well. There's a lot of data that's been collected because I've done some of it. I agree with Don McInhill that the mainstem data collection that's been done out there has been beneficial, maybe marginally at times. I think the outfall sampling is good, but I think the data should be presented and its relevance to where we get today, because if that is the part that gets us to MEP, and that's the goal. To me, too, the permittees, to get to MEP is the golden grail, but that doesn't mean that this program goes away when you get there. This is a sustained program that, as your urban footprint changes, this program remains or changes with it to remain at MEP, and it's always an iterative process. So I think the biggest bang for the buck is a very important thing here. Fire flows, I think we either handle that through a low threat or MS4 that's a phase two or a separate permit. We could do that in a myriad of ways as I see it. I'd also like to know from the standpoint, Roanoke Park, Cotati, some of those other, Sebastopol, those are phase twos, I assume.
They are.
There's some others out there too, I believe, that Caltrans, which I see Caltrans actually, there's a permit. There's a Caltrans permit.
There is. It's actually a phase one municipal.
It's a phase one, okay.
Yes. And it covers all their interconnected highways, drainage, and facilities and activities.
Because to me, to come to this as a watershed approach, as a programmatic watershed tool, I think it's important to look at things as overlapping benefits, whether it be efficiencies of the permittees in this permit to apply programs, but how do we take that also and overlap boundaries here with some of the other permit holders out there, whether it be other phase twos or Caltrans or other entities that are out there. I'd like to see a great importance put on the post-construction BMP management, because I myself have seen many BMPs go in, whether it be something like a fossil filter or a Vortox or something like that that's put in place with good intent, but it's never really serviced thereafter, and it's forgotten about. And until that thing plugs, nobody's looking at it, nobody's doing anything with it as a maintenance tool, and it becomes of marginal benefit down the road where somebody's intent was to put it in there and use it. I'd also like to know, there's a requirement for the iterative process to change ordinances or land use requirements and those types of things. And specifically for myself, I'd like to know what has county or city done here in that regard. I know that I had an instance yesterday where we have a creek project and running a permit through PRMD and other agencies. And we had a requirement, which is very good, that they asked, they came back and said that with their new grading ordinance to consider and put forth an argument or discussion about the effects of our project on water quality and water quantity. And I thought that's good. It's good to see it's there. From the inspection standpoint, there's many other inspectors out there besides your building inspectors, whether it be a Coupa or your industrial waste folks. And I'd like to see some consistent look at how that's done and implemented, so that if you have somebody on site, I think Mr. Ferris is right in that you probably want to go to a facility once or twice a year and not wear out your welcome. But you want to do that effectively. And so if you have a Coupa inspector there, I would like to think that Coupa inspector is a well-trained and well-rounded individual that could check that box and know that at least from the standpoint of the application to that facility, whatever that facility is, that they're implementing their part of a stormwater requirement. Because otherwise, it's putting it on a municipality or a permittee where they're being required to take it from there, basically, and get it into their MS4 system and be responsible from that standpoint. That's generally my comments at this point in guidance. I think staff's done a good job. I think there's a lot of comments out there that came in today that have relevance, and I think we go from here and try and sort that out through. I think there's a dialogue that's happening. There's a public dialogue and input today that I think is very important as well.
Thank you.
Mr. Dunker.
Mona, I would like to, one thing that David had said was there was a lot of good points made today. And it's always good when you can get a lot of good participation in things like this, because that's really what you want. One of the ones that I was really felt more closer to was the, I didn't write down his name, but our fire chief had a lot of good points, and he, you know, he talked about the larger departments as opposed to some of the smaller volunteer departments who have a hard time covering their bases as it is. And he did make some good points in there. I know the fire districts are kind of in their own right, a kind of a strange animal, sometimes their boundaries within their fire districts can overlap and responsibilities and times, and so you can run into some problems there. So I thought he made some good points that you got to take a look at and work out with.
Maybe I can give you a little comment on that a little further as well. We really appreciate, in working with Randy, we really appreciate one of his ideas was to develop some information and education materials for some of the smaller districts, because actually from a water quality standpoint, we've had two discharges in the last couple of years from small volunteer fire departments that have had, in these two cases, pretty big impacts on the receiving water. One was due to a maintenance activity, a big release of foam. The other one was due to some training. So, and we understand, that these small departments really do need some help, but we really would like to see them start getting some more information on how to handle these types of flows and not discharging foam and that kind of thing. So one thing that I think that's been really beneficial about our meetings with Randy and the other people from the Fire Association is that I think we've gotten to a point where we have a lot of really good ideas, and we're all working together to develop those. But I think it's really is important to get some information and education out to even the smaller districts.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
Well, my sense is, the past has been education. That's been the emphasis of the approach and trying to change behavior, change things on the ground through outreach and education. I see this new permit being proposed going beyond that. And asking for more tangible actions. I guess I would agree with the comment to get better cost information on what has been spent and get it in some kind of comparable format. I mean, it's maybe an impossible request because we don't know how these other jurisdictions have calculated, but as been pointed out, there is a pretty wide variation here, and I think we owe it to ourselves to try to find a way to make it work within the confines of the financial times we live in. I mean, I just don't think we want to push. I heard Miles Ferris underscore that the city of Santa Rosa, when this permit came out, was successful in getting a vote of the people to support it. But I'd wager money on what we think as a group sitting here today, we think the outcome of that vote would be in the next election cycle. So, I mean, I think we have to deal with that reality. And towards that end, as I'm asking the permittees to generate cost information, ask our staff to generate benefit information and go through my mind is you generate a spreadsheet that show all the actions being asked for and what do you think is either the benefit or the cost, take either side of it. You know, it's we're asking for something, but it's really not going to cost very much, so take that down. Or we're asking for something and it has a huge benefit, and we make the case. And so in the end, in the 27th meeting of two groups, you can figure out how you're going to blend those two lists together, because in the end, that's the task we have, is to try to make it work.
Thank you.
And also, I heard Caltrans is taken care of. Are we taking care of similar road construction projects in the similar way as to the way Caltrans work is being handled?
Well, actually, Caltrans, State Board staff is in the process right now of drafting a new permit for Caltrans as well. And my understanding from some draft information I've seen is that it's going to be significantly different than their current permit. But again, they've given, you know, they've handed out to the public, you know, various ways that they're considering handling, you know, post-construction treatment control, hydro modification, and that kind of thing. I would say generally, their permit, because they sought it for a statewide permit, it varies a little bit. I mean, it has differences because it's a statewide permit. There are certain realities to having a more localized permit that you can have some more specifics. When you have a statewide permit, it makes the permit fundamentally different. And so they're trying to get at the issues in this draft permit they're working on for Caltrans of how to balance the fact that the permit needs to work statewide, but it also needs to address individual local conditions such as impaired waters, such as a lot of rainfall or not much rainfall. So those kind of issues are being worked on in the second draft. I mean, in the next permit.
And then finally, for me, the EPA and the Laguna TMDL, we still have a representative of the EPA here. The comments you've heard, you can just shake your head up and down or crosswise. Are they reflective of, do you have an understanding that we're on the right path in terms of the way we're understanding your comments about the Laguna TMDL? That was good. That's all I need. I saw it go affirming. So.
We will schedule a discussion with EPA shortly, too, clarify these issues. Oh, sorry.
I guess there's a one subtle issue, I mean, about whether a non-enforceable waste load allocation should stay in the permit. We don't have any problem with that. I think that we're just saying that the thing is too vague to include that as an enforceable limit.
It's my understanding it's in there because we thought you wanted it. So if you don't need it, then
if the board staff thinks there's a benefit to having it in there as an unenforceable reminder of the problem, then support for the additional support for the BMPs, then that's fine with us.
Yeah,
we think it's just too vague to have it as an enforceable limit. We don't know what it means, what the TMDL means.
Okay, thank you. Other comments from the board? Any? Mr. Corbett.
I just wanted to say I think it was a request to compare the cost to the benefits, and so I want to make it clear, at least from my standpoint, we're not asking for a formal cost-benefit analysis, nor are we asking for EPA maximum extent practicable level of analysis. I think we just want a clearer figures than we have now, and so I just wanted to clarify that. In order for you to come back to us in the next 2 years, we were not requesting that formally.
Right.
You're going to make me cry, John. I've made it through this whole day without crying, and you're making me cry. 2 years. What are you doing to me? No, I'm just joking. Thank you for your comment.
Yeah. It was to spare you tears.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Well, it does say we're going to vote on this in October. So. Yeah.
That, of course, is compared to...
Well,
how many changes we have to make to the permit. So that is definitely
2012,
what we're looking to.
2014.
Can I make another comment?
Yes.
Can I make a suggestion as well that the sampling methodology be considered on outfalls? The way that it's written right now, it's a flow-weighted composite, and that implies that you're going to have a flow meter in these outfalls, which to me is probably a very hard thing to do. Mm-hmm. You might want to consider looking at that, and my suggestion is to look at the original or the second draft permit or second term permit where the representative storm was defined, and it was defined on the data that was collected in the watershed of 0.3 inches of rain in 3 hours, and now as it's written, it's different than that. So the basis as it's written is different, and so my suggestion is to look at the sampling methodology and criteria for what is a representative event.
Okay, we will do that. Just a little information on the flow-weighted issue. We were given some information from our TMDL staff about federal regulations that require that stormwater sampling of outfalls be flow-weighted. So we'll take another look at that and see what our flexibility is there, but we might not have as much as we'd like.
Yeah, not a problem. It's just my suggestion to look at it.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Okay, anything else from the staff side? Because the board's done. All right. We're back in the morning, 8:30. Thank you very much.
Thank you.